91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This afternoon, it's a topic which at some point concerns most everyone. As the baby boom generation hits old age, what sort of climate and realities will exist? Can it be an age of dignity? Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. And with this surge of elders, the numbers of those who give care will necessarily increase. We'll visit with the CEO and editor of today's Caregiver magazine, Gary Barg. Also, Guadalupe Rodriguez, who's a social worker and counseling manager for United Home Care, and with Ai-Jen Poo, a director of the Caring Across Generations program. It looks to transform how the elder boom is viewed and even enhanced. She's also the author of Age of Dignity. That's next, First News.
Welcome to Wednesday's Topical Currents, 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. I'm Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. This hour, we discuss the elder boom and its various concerns. There are emotional, health, and financial factors, as well as the burdens upon family caregivers. First in the studio, it's the CEO and senior editor of Caregiver Magazine and Caregiver.com, Gary Barg. Welcome to you, Gary.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you back. Also with us is social worker and the counseling program manager for United Home Care, Guadalupe Rodriguez. United Home Care is a nonprofit South Florida-based organization. Thanks for joining us, Guadalupe.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Mm-hmm. And by phone, we have Ai-Jen Poo. She's the co-director of Caring Across Generations, which sparks connections between generations and much more. She's an activist and director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and she joins us from New York City. Welcome to you, Ai-Jen Poo.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Great to have you. I'd like to start with you, Ai-Jen, if that's okay. Tell us what is this National Domestic Workers Alliance of which you're the director?
We are an organization that is a voice for the 3 million or so professional caregivers that go to work every day in other people's homes, many of whom are caring for our aging loved ones. People like Mrs. Sun, who is a caregiver for my 89-year-old grandmother in Southern California. And, you know, my grandmother, she's in pretty good health, but as she grows older, she needs more and more support in order to live independently and live well. And the work of women like Mrs. Sun makes that possible. And it's incredibly valuable. We call it the work that makes all other work possible. And it's only getting more and more important as people live longer and as the baby boom generation starts reaching retirement age at a rate of 10,000 people per day, 4 million people per year turning 65 in America. We need more care than ever before, and we want to be able to live well as we age and live longer, and it's all possible if we really strengthen the work and really elevate the value of the work of people like Mrs. Sun.
With these huge numbers and the increased life expectancy, this is really kind of a silent crisis that really isn't being addressed.
It's true. It's one of these things where it touches just about every one of us. I mean, whether you're a family caregiver managing the care for someone you love, or you are a senior trying to find the right option, or you live in a multi-generational household, there are at least 100 million Americans who are directly affected by the need for care in this country. There's not a room that I walk into where somebody doesn't have a care story that's very pressing in their lives right now. And we have no real infrastructure or system in place to support it. And that is what my organization and Caring Across Generations is trying to transform. We believe that now is the moment for a very broad public conversation about the caregiving support we need as a country for the future.
Okay, we're going to get back to you, Ai-Jen. We'd like to bring in Gary Barg. It's good to have you back. If you would tell us briefly the circumstances in your life that drove you to establish the magazine, Today's Caregiver, and your website back in 1995.
Absolutely. Well, I was a video producer in Atlanta getting set up to do work for the 96 Olympics, which was a pretty good position to be in. And my family was here. I was born in Miami Beach. My mom, my dad, my grandparents, everybody was living here. And dad had retired in 90 and developed bone marrow cancer pretty much immediately. And mom went from being, you know, love of life for 50 years, and partner and best friend, to being caregiver and everything that goes with that. And I would come in once every 6 weeks or so, but I still didn't catch the extent of what she was going through as a caregiver. And there was a time in 94 I had a chance to come in and be here for 2 weeks and live through what she was living through. And I went back to Atlanta and got my stuff and became what I call a caregiver's caregiver. And a year later, we started Today's Caregiver magazine and then caregiver.com and hosted the Fearless Caregiver Conferences, which we just hosted our 152nd event. Mm-hmm. And it's our 20th year of supporting family caregivers. And I have to tell you, it's really kind of a family business as much as anything else. My brother's involved, my niece is involved. My mom comes to the office and runs herd over us every day. So it's been kind of wonderful.
Over 20 years, you must have heard some really weird stories and I mean, terrible stories.
Well, that's the thing, you know, every airline trip I take, when it's, I mention what I do, becomes a support group at 40,000 feet. Former First Lady Rosalynn Carter, I think, said it best when she said, there's only four kinds of people in the world. Those who have been caregivers, those who are currently caregivers, those who will be caregivers, and those who will need caregivers. And that's really all of us. We've either done it, we're a serial caregiver, like my family, or we know it's coming, or worst of all, it's coming and we're not going to be prepared for what happens when we walk through that looking glass when our loved one takes ill.
And once again, welcome to Guadalupe Rodriguez of United Home Care. Guadalupe, tell us more about the nonprofit United Home Care.
Yes, United Home Care is a private nonprofit organization that grew out of United Way 41 years ago. And we're serving in the Miami-Dade County 5,000 clients. We provide in-home and community-based services in the comfort of their home. And the goal is to promote independence and wellness so that our members can remain in the home, in the comfort of their home, with the care of their loved ones. We provide a variety of services, many in-home personal care, home making, escort, respite, and a whole array of services that are publicly funded or privately funded and also by other organizations. It is through this work that we have become keenly aware of the burdens that family members bear, particularly working caregivers. Mm-hmm. In our state, 30% are elders, and out of those 30%, 20% need services that are provided by working caregivers, either full-time or part-time.
Right.
And they are faced with the real, real difficult decisions of choosing many times between their employment or their loved one. And so our agency has become sensitive to that, and we're launching our program, Caregivers United program, in response to that, to reach out to the work sites and offer our services, and we have several.
To the employers.
To the employers and the employees. This is at no cost to the employer and at no cost to the employee. What we're offering is, it has several components. We're offering a lunch and learn seminars with topics that are relevant to what they're going through, stress management and self-care, community resources, dementia and memory loss, family dynamics of caregiving. We're offering to do them at the work site within the hour lunch, and other components that I'll be happy to share with you.
Okay, Ai-Jen, this is truly a brilliant idea, and I realize you got a MacArthur Genius Grant, so. But it's transformational, really, for caregiving to put together domestic workers with those in need of elder care or even the disabled. How did this come about for you? Was it your grandmother that inspired this, or what was it in your life?
Well, it was actually the domestic workers who, I mean, the way that caring across generations was conceptualized was that the domestic workers in our alliance started saying that their employers had originally hired them as housekeepers or as nannies, and they were suddenly being called upon to take care of Aunt Joan with Alzheimer's, or Grandma was being discharged after having a mild stroke and they needed someone to go and cook for her. And it makes a lot of sense because domestic workers are trusted with the most precious elements of their employers' lives, and it would make natural sense that they would then call upon them for help with elder care. And the workers were saying that this work is actually different from child care and housekeeping work, that it requires a very particular set of skills, and they wanted training and preparation to be able to really support the families they work for with their elder care needs. And so it was in that context that we started to realize the tremendous demographic shift underway and the complete lack of real support that American families have in terms of meeting their elder care and long-term care needs, and that this workforce could be a huge part of the solution and already is becoming a part of the solution in a very patchwork manner. And so the vision of Caring Across Generations, which was conceptualized in a room of about 200 domestic workers who were saying, if only the powers that be knew how much the families we work for need us right now, then maybe our wages would be better, and maybe we would have more access to training, and maybe we could even have access to a pass to immigration reform and legal status and citizenship in this country. And so we started to conceptualize a win-win solution where this tremendous need for care and real options in the home and community could be met by a growing workforce and transforming these jobs at the same time into jobs that you can really take pride in and support your family on and have a real pathway to opportunity the way that manufacturing jobs did in the 20s and 30s.
We're listening to Aijen Poo. She's an activist and director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance and co-director of the Caring Across Generations campaign. Also in the studio with us, Gary Barg, editor-in-chief and CEO of today's Caregiver Magazine, and Guadalupe Rodriguez, a licensed clinical social worker and master of public health and counseling program manager for United Home Care. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Twenty minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're talking about caregiving this afternoon with Gary Barg, Guadalupe Rodriguez, and Aijen Poo. Tell me, all of our panels, for any or all of our panelists, what can the employers change to make life more flexible for caregivers? And what are some of the innovations you recommend or have implemented? It's easy for caregiving, as Gary has mentioned, to force caregivers into poverty.
And to get sick themselves. Guadalupe, do you want to...
Right. Well, first of all, they have to recognize the issue. This is an issue that is here to stay, and it impacts both the employer and the employee. Studies have been made that there's a loss of $33 billion in productivity. Mm-hmm. There's absenteeism. Working caregivers are forced to either have unexcused absences or unanticipated absences. They arrive late or they have to leave early because of unpredictable things that arise with their loved ones. There's also the issue of presenteeism, that many are there, but really their mind is not there. They wish to be with their loved one at the hospital, or they're wondering if their loved one had lunch, if they're taking their medication, if they're getting along with their new caregiver. So they're there, but their mind is not there. So it behooves employers to recognize the issue and realize that there are very cost-effective things that can be done. We're talking about flexible work schedules where the employee is accountable for the task, but not within time constraints, that they can allow for family needs, that they don't have to choose between their family member or their work. When employers implement these very easy things to implement, like a 4-week work schedule, that the caregiver can have an extra day to deal with their loved one's needs without feeling guilty that they're taking time away from their employment. It impacts job performance. So allowing for these and being a family-friendly environment, creating these environments will increase motivation. It will increase retention. It will reduce turnover. I know of employees that have had this 4-hour work week, and they, no matter how stressful their job is, they'll say, I will not walk away. To have that extra day to be able to take care of my kids or my parents or myself is priceless. So it behooves because to reduce the turnover rates, to improve morale, and just to the image of the employer, just to have a stable workforce, it's very costly to have to constantly be retraining employees right. When you have experienced employees that know the job and are qualified employees. So to incentivize and be able to offer this really just gives the employee peace of mind and increases productivity.
And engenders loyalty on the part of the employee.
Correct. Correct.
Gary?
I think that's absolutely true. One of the things we found in the early days, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, into the last century, whenever I talk to corporate leaders, is they didn't see it. It didn't seem to inure to the bottom line. And now, over the last 10 years or so, there have been so many statistics. A family caregiver could lose $600,000 in the lifetime of their career. Presenteeism, which is absolutely correct. You're sitting there at your desk, but you're not really.
Once people have their own parents going through things, I'm sure they're more understanding.
Well, that's the interesting right. point, Joe, because I remember it's 12 years ago or so, one of these corporate leaders, a pharmaceutical company exec who will remain mm-hmm. nameless, who didn't believe in the needs of family caregivers when I first talked to him, about 5 years later called me in a panic because his mom lived in Boca, and he now got it and he understood. And actually, shortly thereafter, his corporation started implementing some of the support necessary for family caregivers. I think in the show that was on WLRN, the Caring for Mom and Dad, the Target is a real leader in this arena, and it engenders that family caregiver to want to stay, right. want to work harder, want to care more about their corporation they work for because they care about them, and they're not hiding anymore. They can raise their hand and say, "I'm a caregiver, I need help," and it helps them. It helps their family members, but it also helps the corporation they work for. It's not anything that doesn't affect every single employer. I know that personally.
Jen Poo, your take on this?
I agree with everything that's been said. And I would just add that just the simple policies of paid time off and paid family leave. I think the United States is the only developed country where there isn't universal paid family leave and paid time off, and employers can really help take the lead in establishing that as the new norm, which is absolutely fundamental, I think, and there's more and more data, as our other guests have noted, that it's good for the economy and it's actually good for business. The other thing I would quickly say is that there are a lot of people who employ caregivers in their own homes, so employers of professional caregivers. And oftentimes we don't even think of ourselves as employers because we go to work every day for someone else. And it's important to remember that your home is also a workplace. And for millions of professional caregivers out there, that is their livelihood and their income, and they're also caring for their own families. And so just to remember that a living wage, paid time off, paid family leave, these are all things that are important for professional caregivers as well, and that we as individual employers also need to think about that responsibility. And we've created a tool that can help employers called the Fair Care Pledge, which is really an awareness-raising tool that allows for people who are employing caregivers to take a pledge and commit to fair pay, paid time off, and a clear work agreement as three core principles to a fair and healthy, sustainable caregiving relationship.
Some would really abhor any tax money going for this, and some would say that this would raise prices because of employer costs. What would be the political hurdles to implement some of your ideas?
You know, there is a major hurdle in terms of how we think about the question of cost. Oftentimes, there's fear of raising taxes or what a social insurance program or something that could support the economic needs of families when it comes to affording caregiving. And the truth is that we're already paying an enormous cost for elder care and long-term care in this country that is, frankly, unbearable for a lot of families. The average private room stay in a nursing home costs between $89,000 and $150,000 per year. That, on top of the cost of health care and prescriptions, I mean, it's just unbelievable what families are paying, and even families who've saved and planned are going bankrupt and completely depleting their savings. And so we've got to figure out a way that is really about planning and new system and infrastructure creation that will be really a down payment on the long-term sustainability and viability of the working family in America. I think we should really shift the way we think about cost from a huge burden that we can't afford to an investment in the future.
Well, and as everybody was just saying, the loss in productivity, the loss of employees, not to mention the employee bearing the brunt of the financial burden, but the loss in productivity for employers is in the billions of dollars.
That's right.
So it behooves everybody to want to address this and to take it on. Gary?
You know, and what's good about these last 10 years or so is that we do have the statistics to back this up, and it's not invisible money, just people aren't paying attention to anymore. So it's $33 billion to corporations, the cost of the challenge to employees in corporations cost them almost $400 billion. And if every family caregiver went on strike tomorrow and we did nothing, none of the things that we do for free, good services, support for our loved ones, the system would have to find over $300 billion to replace what we do. You know, so between the potential devastation that happens when a family deals with caregiving and they're not prepared, and the potential human cost of caregiving, I think Stanford University came out with a study about 10 years ago that said 40% of caregivers who are caring for loved ones with cognitive disorders, something like Alzheimer's, will die before the person they care for due to the effects
of stress.
So it behooves us as a system, as a country, as a nation, to do what we can do to support these people who are really creating this wonderful, you know, a safety net at their own peril.
Guadalupe, you're the counseling program manager for United Home Care. You deal a lot with people with cognitive disabilities and Alzheimer's. What is your role?
We provide in-home counseling services to family caregivers. And of course, the working caregivers many times cannot take advantage of those services. But we have witnessed what we're talking about, caregivers that have left the workplace because of the needs of their loved one, because they couldn't afford a paid caregiver, and because whatever government-funded programs are serving their loved ones are not enough for the care that they need. And it has a dual effect, because they are losing wages. It's been documented, at least in their lifespan, 300,000 in lost salaries, wages. And they're there with their loved one, but then the added component is that their health is impacted, because it's very physically strenuous. And it creates a whole level of stress that they worry, I'm going to go before my loved one, and what's going to happen then? Or if I remain alive, my health is going to be so impacted, and I'm not going to be have the funds to be able to deal when my time comes.
And who's going to take care of
me? Exactly, exactly. And so it's a crucial issue that needs to be addressed. Also, employers, the employees are using 27% more of the health plan due to the stress and the impact on the employees' health. Mm. So it has to be addressed.
We're speaking about caregiving, elder care, and caring for the disabled. If that's the case, on today's Topical Currents, a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Wednesday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're discussing the elder boom and the various ramifications of that with Ai-Jen Poo. She's the co-director of Caring Across Generations. She's also the author of The Age of Dignity, Caring for a Changing America. And we haven't gotten to that yet, but we will. Also in the studio with us, Gary Barg is CEO and senior editor of Caregiver Magazine. And we also have Guadalupe Rodriguez, who is a social worker and the counseling program manager for United Home Care.
And our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Also email, if you're a little shy, radio@wlrn.org.
If you're a caregiver, you're employed, unemployed, how it's affected you. If you're a domestic worker who's interested in becoming a caregiver, or if you're in need of caregiving, we would love to hear from you. Guadalupe, during the break, we were talking about Caregivers United.
Yes, this is an initiative that we have developed inspired by the work that we do with family caregivers. And we realized the need to go out to the work sites. So like I said, we are starting with the lunch and learn seminars to address topics that are needed by in the caregivers. And also, we're offering our call center to the employees and to the employers that they can call our call center and access resources, information that will help them navigate the systems and all the resources that are out there to see what's a match for them and point them in the right direction. Also for the employers that they can have confidential consultations with our HR department, how to deal with a caregiver crisis at their work site. These are all free of cost and available to employers and employees. And we also have another component that we're offering in the community, which is the private care options for the employee. We help them through our call center to apply for benefits or fund or government-funded programs for their loved one if they're eligible. We help them apply for public assistance, but these have long waiting lists. So if they would choose to contract the same services that we provide under government-funded programs for their loved ones privately, they can be contracted per hour, whatever they need or they afford. And we're also promoting with the employers a cost share with their employees if they choose to participate in offsetting this cost to the employees. So we're very excited. We're launching the program. We're preparing our HR kits to go out in the community and promote it and offer it to the employers. We're looking forward to the feedback, and we hope to really make a difference and impact this issue, which is a great need.
No, I love the work that Guadalupe does, and we've seen each other at our Fearless Caregiver conferences. Her and her staff are phenomenal. And the idea of going out to the corporations and showing them what will help them. I mean, it'll help them financially. It'll help them retain employees, and it'll help the employees that they have. So I think that it's an extremely important concept, and we're looking forward to following it as you
How
go along.
How about public employers? Are they participating much?
Yes. Well, we're reaching out from our agency's perspective. We're starting with the business, but we hope to go to other to the academic employers, you know, the educational employees, the health and industry, the healthcare industry. So we're launching the pilot with the business sector of the community, but we hope to expand, and hopefully that other agencies will join us in this effort. And you know, there's so many employers out there, every single business sector, like Ms. Poo expressed. This is an issue that touches all of us, and it's
Oh, absolutely.
Everywhere.
Ijen, tell us about your book, The Age of Dignity, Caring for a Changing America.
The book is really meant to really connect the stories that so many of us are experiencing, but in isolation. It's the story of older adults like my grandmother who spent her life caring for others and now needs more support in order to live well and the challenges that come along with that. It's the story of my mother and my aunt who are in the sandwich generation, still concerned about their own children and struggling to manage the care of their parents, sort of paninied between the care needs of two generations while working full-time. And it's the story of professional caregivers who really love the work that they do, which is it's fundamentally about supporting the dignity of our elders and people with disabilities, and yet are so undervalued in our society to the point where the median annual income of a home care worker in the United States is $13,000 per year. Poverty wages for the people who in many ways do the work that matters most and makes everything else possible. So it's connecting the stories, real stories in my family and in the movement that I'm a part of with the solutions that can actually point the way forward. And I talk about the need to establish what I call the care grid, which is a new 21st century infrastructure like the highways and roadways and pipes and infrastructure that we laid at different points in this country to bring running water and electricity to every home in America, the internet to every home in America. We actually need an infrastructure that will bring real care options to every home in America in this period. And it will look different. It won't be made of pipes and waterways, but it will be one that really values this relationship of care that's going to be so important to our lives in the future.
So you're talking about the dignity not only of the one being cared for, but the dignity of the caregiver, that they're
that's
both
right.
Right.
And not only, I'm talking about not only family caregivers, I'm also
right.
talking about the professional caregivers, and that the dignity of every single one of those experiences is interdependent, and our solution should also be holistic.
How do you think you can, especially these immigrant domestic workers, how can they be protected from exploitation in terms of salaries, benefits, whatever, other than taking this Fair Care Pledge? Is there any movement afoot for that?
There is. We are going to be introducing in Congress a caregiver path to citizenship legislation and legislative framework that would allow for the many, many caregivers who are already supporting families around the country but who are trapped in the shadows because of their undocumented status. It will allow them to come out of the shadows, receive the training and supports necessary to provide the highest quality care and also get on a path to legal status and citizenship in this country. And we think that's going to be a huge part of how we meet the care needs in the future. And if we think about the numbers, with 27 million of us needing care by the year 2050, we're going to need not only family caregivers to be supported, but a huge caregiving workforce. And we simply don't have that workforce in place, and it will be an all-hands-on-deck situation. So immigrants will have to be a part of the solution, and I think that's an opportunity to address something we've long needed to address.
What kind of
immigration?
What kind sort of accountability will these new caregivers be held to ensure the elders aren't cheated or abused or exploited? If there's money being directed somewhere, someone will exploit it.
Well, that's especially the case when you have, I mean, the private pay care market is referred to as the gray market because so much of it happens in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the part of the market that's growing the fastest because of our lack of a real public investment in caregiving. And so people are piecing it together. And when you have a shadow economy, it's very difficult to shine a light, to establish standards, to raise standards, to improve quality all around for seniors, for workers, for everyone involved. And I think addressing the immigration question is a huge part of how we shine a light on this entire industry such that we can shore up standards and protections for consumers and workers alike. Otherwise, you have an environment where it's like the Wild West and anything goes on all sides of the equation.
Right. Gary?
I'm so thrilled to be on this program with iGen. I love the work that Caring Across Generations does. I believe that the family caregiver needs to see themselves as CEO of Caring for My Loved One, Inc., and I believe that everybody who touches our loved ones needs to be seen as a professional partner. And to professionalize the staff that helps our loved ones is so very important because it brings, like she says, everything out of the shadows. And some states have been playing with cash and care, where they have some accountancy or management. They give the money to the family caregiver, but they're also overseeing what happens. And
right.
I think some of those experiments are going to really play out well.
I also want to echo what Gary and Ms. Poo are saying, because our professional caregivers do become an informal family member. And our members become so attached, and they do relate to them as members. So it is hugely important.
Absolutely.
I refer to it in the book as moving from the superhero model to the super friends network model, because right now, as it stands, the experience of family caregivers is it's a huge responsibility, so much isolation, and very little support. And we sort of have this cultural norm where we feel like we have to take it all on, and it's an impossible situation. You never feel like you're doing enough, and it's practically impossible. And the truth is that we actually need a model where it's a team-based model of care, where we create a circle of care that includes the family caregivers, all the family members, the professional caregivers, the entire care team, healthcare professionals, really working as a super friends network to support people to live well and with dignity. And the more we create those circles and think about it as a collaboration and as one extended family that creates a circle, I think that the more we'll be able to not only improve quality of life but really improve health outcomes for our aging loved ones as well.
iGen Poo, Guadalupe Rodriguez, Gary Barg, Topical Currents, Caregiving. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. We're talking about caretaking generally with iGen Poo. She's an activist, director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and co-director of Caring Across Generations campaign. Gary Barg, is editor-in-chief of today's Caregiver magazine. Guadalupe Rodriguez is with United Home Care. And we have some calls. We're going to take them, but we want to ask you, so you won't have to hold, if you do have a question at this point, it would be best if you emailed it to radio@wlrn.org. If you're in need of caregiving or you're seeking a caregiver, radio@wlrn.org.
And first up, it's Sherry in Fort Lauderdale. Hey there.
Hi. Thank you for sharing this topic with the listeners today. I have a different perspective on this issue, and it's coming from the perspective of the young caregiver. I recall when I was a young teenager, 12, 13, 14, having to miss school and spend weekends caring for my grandmother and my grandfather, and I did so, you know, in great love to make sure that they had someone there for them to cook meals and help as much as I could as a teenager. And I know this is a continued issue with the young people today, having parents and even grandparents who are ill, and they have to take time away from school. They can't have jobs, you know, to help support the family because they're caretaking. And I wanted to know if there was any consideration given or any solutions that you've learned of that could help this population navigate the whole caretaking system and to get the resources they need, because they just are not there.
That's a great point, Sherry. Gary?
As a matter of fact, a dear friend of mine, Dr. Connie Siskowski, started the American Association of Caregiving Youth in Boca. I think it's AACY.org. You can find it on caregiver.com if I had that wrong. And there are right now that they've assessed, I think, a handful of million caregivers who are kids who care. And they go into elementary school, they're coming home, and they are caring. Yeah. And I just thought it was a thing that happened. My college roommate did that for both his parents. But Connie and her group, she was a CNN hero a few years ago, have done magnificent work in supporting kids who care. So I'm really glad you brought this topic up.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Did either Guadalupe or Igen, you want to add anything?
I would just echo, this is an increasing issue here, and it has two sides to it. One is that young people are taking on a lot of responsibility without a lot of support. And it's also, there's a kind of joyful dimension to this, which is that the fact that we're living longer, it allows for more time for connections across generations to happen. And I've met so many millennials who are incredibly connected to their grandparents, really engaged in their grandparents' care and in their lives, and also wanting more opportunities to connect. And so I think that this is both a challenge and an opportunity for us to kind of strengthen the fabric of our families and the connection across generations in this country, which has been really severed or frayed over the last three decades.
Also, this is Guadalupe, and I would encourage to reach out to here in the Miami-Dade County. We're fortunate to have the Switchboard of Miami that you can reach out, the 211 that can give you all kinds of resources. So just to encourage to reach out, you can also call our call center at 305-716-0710. And just to really encourage the youth that there are resources, that they don't have to do it alone, and to reach out to all the incredible resources in the community. And until you get those services and supports that you need, to not give up. And there is a whole community out there with many, many options that they can tap into, and hopefully that they will reach out to.
We'll be giving out a lot of contact information, numbers, and emails near the end of the program. Also, if you go to the Topical Currents Facebook page, we'll have links on there, and also at our website, WLRN.org. Also, if you have a relative or a friend who maybe didn't hear this program and you think they should, go to our website, WLRN.org. About an hour after the program, we'll have audio archives that you can download and hear the whole program at your leisure. Next up, we have Richard in Miami. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a founder of a company in Miami who's actually addressing all of these issues. My experience in home care was always that we had a huge roster of nurses, and just not enough work for everyone. So there are workers out there who are willing and able to care for family members. Most people just can't afford them. So my company, room2care.com, essentially connects seniors and their families with caregivers in the community that are willing to provide care and actually have the senior move in with the caregiver, rather than having the senior move into a facility or have the caregiver go to the senior's home, which is exceedingly expensive. As we all know, home care and assisted living is very expensive. So we're trying to come up with new alternatives to long-term care.
Okay.
This sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
Any comment?
Well, I think anything new that helps that connection between keeping a senior in the home, you know, I say that 96% of care is done at home, and about 70% of it's okay. The other 26%, we're simply killing ourselves. So any thing that is safe and effective and legal that allows people to be able to be cared for at home or in the community longer, I think is a good thing.
You know, one thing we haven't mentioned, which we most often think of girls and women as caregivers, but this seems to have also shifted in recent time. You yourself were one, but according to the study, maybe it's 45%.
Yeah, it's gone up. I think when we started 20 years ago, the number was 23% male, and now it's almost 50-50. It's, you know, 55-45. So, and when we have our Fearless Caregiver conferences, we see those numbers. We've started to see over the last 20 years more men in the audience with their hands raised asking questions. So
I would think it's more difficult for men just because of their nature and not wanting to ask for help maybe as much as women do, men caregivers, and feeling like they have to work. Well, of course, women do too, but...
Well, you know, when you see one caregiving situation, you've seen one caregiving situation, but I just thinking back through all those rooms and all those conferences and all those cities, I can see that. In Fort Lauderdale, a few years ago, a gentleman stood up and he started crying and he said, my wife had to go into a long-term care facility. I know it's the right thing. I know it's the right place, but I don't want to not be the caregiver anymore. And by the time I could get to him and say a word, five caregivers surrounded him, hugged him and said, you're always the caregiver. You're always in charge. You're always a partner in care with whoever's caring for your loved one.
Guadalupe.
Yes, and in the work that our counselors do at United Home Care, we have also seen our male caregivers, and they, you know, are doing an amazing job and saying, how could I not do it? My loved one was there for me every single day throughout our life, and I just can't walk away and see myself not do it. So it is just as much dedication and devotion to their loved one. And very inspiring stories that we see.
And I think the numbers you're seeing with more men is a more of a self-identification. People are starting to identify as caregivers, as opposed to, well, I work 40 hours, I have my kids, I now care for my mom 40 hours. It's what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
Now they're starting to say, which is really important, because one of the greatest challenges of supporting caregivers is that they don't see themselves as caregivers. So the fact that people are self-identifying is a good thing.
We're also very short on time, but something that happens to many families is that the resentment between siblings, those who live away,
right,
out of state, versus those who are going through the daily battles with the individual.
Definitely. That's a huge, one of our lunch seminars focuses on that, the family dynamics of caregiving, because there's the guilt of the one that's not there, and then there's the physical extenuation of the one that is there, and then one has the physical decision making, but they're all involved, and there's so many conflicts and troubles and communication that, you know, families need to address this, and how can we resolve this, and what can we do? So giving the families and caregivers guidance how to deal with the difficult topics and how to navigate the family dynamics of caregiving, hugely important.
Starting with iGen Poo, I would appreciate it if you'd each give your website, your contact information, your book, your magazine, whatever. iGen?
Yes, my book is called The Age of Dignity, and we would love to have your listeners sign up on the Caring Across America website, www.caringacrossamerica.com or www.caringacross.org, and join the conversation.
Okay. Gary?
We're today's Caregiver Magazine, and it's caregiver.com. We're hosting three Fearless Caregiver Conferences in this neck of the woods, one in Boca, one in Fort Lauderdale, one in Miami, throughout the fall. It's free tickets for family caregivers, and they could call 877-829-2734. And we look forward to seeing everybody there.
Okay, in Guadalupe.
Okay, and my agency is United Home Care. You can contact our call center, 305-716-0710, or visit our website at www.unitedhomecare.com and mention the Caregivers United program.
Well, thank you all so much. iGen Poo, activist, Gary Barg, editor-in-chief, today's Caregiver Magazine, Guadalupe Rodriguez, counseling program manager for United Home Care. Thank you all for your participation today.
Thank you.
And if you didn't catch the whole hour or think someone close to you should hear it, you're in luck. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, wlrn.org. Click the radio link. More information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. Tomorrow's program begins with an update about South Florida's environmental concerns, with a focus on Biscayne National Park. After years of study and public input, a new general management plan has been created. And more, Linda Gastenheimer's Food and Dining with the wine guy, Fred Tasker. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.